Hey there, and thanks for venturing beyond the Rotunda, your Farmingdale Public Library podcast, where we often talk about literature, history, and community. But sometimes we answer questions like, what is that thing that brings you joy every time you experience it? I am your narrator, Kevin Schultz. Let's go for a ride. This is episode 12 of the Beyond the Rotunda podcast, a production of the Farmingdale Public Library, where we are more than just books. And I thank everyone for joining me for this episode. And I do hope you all had an exciting, safe, and joyous 4th of July holiday weekend. I did enjoy a nice barbecue with my family, which is exactly what this theme is all about. Not barbecues, but joy. I sat down with best-selling author Ellen Meister, whose 10th and latest novel, Joyride, recently mounted itself onto bookshelves everywhere. We discussed the joys in her life, the lives of her characters, and in writing in general. But before we get to that, let's check out our cover question. What is that thing that brings you joy every time you experience it? Now, of course, I believe that is possible for people to have multiple things in their lives that brings them joy. And these things can come and go as we navigate through our lives. For example, I used to love coaching youth basketball. Being able to impart my knowledge of the game into these 6 and 7 and 8 year olds was very gratifying. Plus, the joy on their faces whenever they had a success, like stealing the ball or grabbing a rebound or scoring, immediately put joy onto my own face. Unfortunately, I don't coach youth basketball anymore. The thing I do now that brings me joy is this podcast. I have a blast researching the bios of my guests, reading their materials when applicable, coming up with questions that I truly want the answers to, and then executing the interview. My guests have been so gracious with their time and so interesting and fun to talk with. When I listen to the finished product, I am truly overjoyed. Then, of course, on a more personal level, witnessing the successes of my own family brings me the ultimate joy. So those are some of the things that are in my book. Let's find out what's in yours. We have Nicole from Farmingdale who writes, "What brings me joy is my artwork. I get pleasure adding color and design to what otherwise would be a monotone material, such as a water bottle or a denim jacket. Plus, the serenity of being out in nature when I am painting landscapes is a great stress reliever." Nicole, that is awesome. It is great having that outlet. Now we have Shannon from Plainview who says, "Over the past 14 years, I have gotten joy out of the friendships I have developed with my teachers. I had lots of fun and learned so much from them. They helped shape me into the young woman that I am today, and I respect them so much for that." Well, Shannon, that's really nice. We should all honor our teachers like that. Now we have JR from Farmingdale who says, "I get joy from nature. Whether it is tending to my garden, watching the birds and rabbits in my backyard, or going for a hike in the woods, I find the solitude peaceful and relaxing." JR, I am right there with you. I do enjoy a good hike. And finally, we have Jack from Plainview who writes, "What brings me the most joy is music. Even though I am still only in my teens, I fell in love with the music from the 1970s and 80s as a very young boy. My goal is to someday host my own podcast, like you. Except my podcast will be about music. I will be so proud and filled with so much joy if this dream comes true." Jack, I am so happy that you have this goal and that I am a small influence in that. I am sure that when your dream does come true, you will be a much better podcaster than me. I thank you all for participating, and I do hope that everyone finds their personal joy. Next month's cover question will be, in which fictional cinematic universe would you want to live? Send your responses to me at beyondtherotunda@farmingdalelibrary.org or catch me on Facebook and Instagram by searching Kevin Schultz BTR. And now let's turn the page to my interview with Ellen Meister, where you will hear a little secret as to why an author might give a character an artistic trait. Enjoy. We are here with best-selling author Ellen Meister, who also is a book coach, screenwriter, and a creative writing instructor. Her essays have appeared in many publications, including The Huffington Post, The Daily Beast, Long Island's Woman's Magazine, and Writer's Digest. Her latest and 10th novel, Joyride, is in the early stages of its release. Ellen Meister, welcome, and thank you for venturing beyond the rotunda.
Absolutely thrilled to be here. Thanks, Kevin.
Now, normally, I jump right into my guest's specific cover question, and we're going to get to that. But last month, I asked, have you ever encountered someone famous? And I understand that you have a family connection that may apply. Can you tell us about that?
Oh, yeah. So many people are very interested to learn that I'm Lisa Kudrow's cousin. Or maybe I should say Lisa Kudrow is my cousin.
There you go.
I'm even occasionally told that people can see this family resemblance. Yeah, obviously, I've known Lisa my whole life, even though we grew up on opposite coasts. And the families have always been very close, and I adore her. And it's just really helped me to understand that celebrities are just regular people. And sometimes you're related to them. So, but Lisa's great. And she's been very, very good to me in my career. She did the audiobook for my first book. So.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I didn't realize that. That's great.
Yeah. She did. And she doesn't usually do audiobooks. And of course, she was amazing.
Right.
I mean, she just did a tremendous job. She added humor to it. She added life to it. She was absolutely terrific. Very grateful. And she talked about it on The Tonight Show, which was also pretty exciting. My only time on The Tonight Show was via Lisa. So, yeah.
Well, obviously, you have a very artistic family. Yourself, the author, Lisa, the actress.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any other famous athletes we should know about?
Athletes? No. No famous athletes. But yeah, I think there's quite a few people I really do respect and admire in my family, among my siblings, my cousins, my extended relatives. So yeah.
Sure,
yeah,
sure.
It's a nice group. Yeah.
Well, so my wife, Jennifer, who is an artist, went to school with Jennifer Aniston, who obviously starred in Friends with cousin Lisa Kudrow. So those are my degrees of separation.
There you go.
I've never spoken to Jennifer Aniston or to Lisa Kudrow, but I am speaking to you.
Yeah.
So let's get to Ellen Meister's cover question.
Sure.
What is that one thing that brings you joy every time you experience it?
I might have a multi-part answer to that, but I will tell you probably the thing that stands out most is that I have three adult children. And every time I discover that they're smarter than me, which often happens several times a day, it brings me almost unspeakable joy. I just can float right out of my seat every time I rediscover that. They're amazing humans and I admire them so much. I could also say that the way my husband looks at me brings me joy. And of course, the two dogs daily. So yeah, that's my multi-part answer to that question.
Sure. It's good to have more than one thing that brings you joy.
Sure. There are other things that bring me joy, but those are the things that are really top the list.
Right. No, that's great. Thank you for playing along.
Sure.
All right. Let's get into it. Are you a born and raised New Yorker?
Yes, I was actually born and raised Long Islander. Well, born in the Bronx, but raised, here in Nassau County.
Okay.
Yeah, and I've lived here pretty much my whole life. I went away to school in SUNY Buffalo, did spend a semester in London, lived in Queens as a young adult and young married, but I've been back on Long Island for quite a number of years now. So yeah.
What part of Queens?
Forest Hills,
Oh.
which I loved. It was just a great place. I was
Right.
there, at the offset of my career, and also as a young married person, and when I had my first two children, and Forest Hills was just a great place to be a young mom. I actually loved it. So,
My wife's
yeah.
family is from Forest Hills, so sure.
Oh, I don't know. She and I would have a lot to talk about then.
Yes.
Catch up. Yeah.
So I've noticed that your novels are predominantly set in New York.
Yes.
How important is the setting to your novels, and specifically New York?
Well, they often say, you often hear write what you know. And I honestly think that's only true to a certain extent. However, as far as setting is concerned, I think verisimilitude is incredibly important. It sets the stage for readers to believe the world of the book and believe that it's really taking place. So I think if you start with a setting that you're familiar with, you have a launching point for creating something that feels real and feels authentic to the readers. And I always want to deliver an authentic experience to my readers. So 9 out of my 10 novels do take place in New York City or Long Island. The one exception was my previous book, Divorce Towers, which took place in Beverly Hills. And I think the reason for that was because it was sort of my pandemic novel. It's actually my second pandemic novel, but I think at that point, I really needed an escape. And I was feeling like readers really needed an escape. So it was also my most glam novel. So I wanted to sort of write a fish out of water book and bring myself and my readers someplace a little bit more different and glamorous. So that was my one foray into a different setting, but back on Long Island for well, actually in Brooklyn for Joyride. So I'm back in familiar territory now. But I did enjoy the little foray into Beverly Hills. It was
Sure.
fun.
I see how it all ties together. That makes sense. Yeah. When did you realize you wanted to become an author?
That's such a good question, Kevin. I realized it at one very, very specific moment in high school. Until that moment, I think I thought I wanted to act, and I had written something, and I knew it felt right, and a teacher had reacted well to it. Not glowing, I should add. I just got like the tiniest little compliment, but it set something off in me. And it was just like a moment where the light switched on, and I thought, oh, right, that's what I am. I don't know why I didn't see it till now. I'm a writer. I am a writer. And as soon as I got the idea, I just knew it was true that I was a writer right through to my core. It just took like one specific moment of the light just sort of seeping in. And I've known ever since that very moment that that's what I am.
And when
Yeah.
you know, you know.
I knew. I mean, I knew there was just no question that that's what I was going to do. That's what I wanted to do. That's what I was meant to do. And that's where my talent was. That's the thing that I was most able to do. So, yeah.
So was writing or journalism part of your education?
I went to SUNY Buffalo and I majored in English literature with a concentration in creative writing. So I didn't go to J school. I was never a journalist. But when I graduated from college looking for a job, I gravitated toward advertising and sales promotion. So I was doing that kind of writing in my career. I was the person who would write things like, "And if you order now," not very creative, but it did teach me a few things. It taught me to be to get to the point, to grab the reader's attention really, really quickly and not let go, because especially with that kind of writing, people are not interested in the writing. You've got to grab them very, very quickly. So I really learned how to tap dance my little heart out from the very first paragraph to try to keep the reader to want to stay with me. And I actually enjoy copywriting. I still enjoy copywriting. And I would say, and when I say copywriting, what I mean is really sales writing, sales promotion
Right.
writing. And every time my publisher involves me in writing book jacket copy, I feel like I get to flex those muscles again. And like I said, I always enjoy it. And sometimes it's something I help writing clients with, writing their pitch letters, writing their query letters, writing their, book jacket blurb. So I do enjoy still, I still do enjoy writing copy.
Any writing is good writing, right?
Yeah, listen, it's, we all come at it with different backgrounds, with different strengths. I know a lot of novelists do come at it with a journalism background. But there are some writers, the most famous one that comes to mind is James Patterson, who did come to this business with an advertising background,
Right.
And like I said, I think there's something to be said for it. But yeah, I mean, if you've got the writing bug, you're just going to keep at it and keep going.
Take me through your writing process.
Well, I will say, first of all, I want to give one caveat, which is that what works for me works for me. And I never prescribe to writers that there's only one way to do it. I always tell writers they have to find what works for them. It's a very individual process. I happen to be an early morning writer. So I tend to get up at 5 or 5:30 in the morning and start my writing day then. After I have my first cup of coffee, I'm really good to go. And that's when I'm most creative, and that's when I'm sharpest, and that's when I can and really see the sentences fly. Very hard for me to write in the evening. I just kind of lose it. Even just writing like a simple email, I really struggle with it for
Right.
8 p.m. Morning is my time. But in terms of how I figure out how to write my novels, how to structure my novels, I really am a very firm believer in story structure, which doesn't mean that I write these really tight, structured outlines before I begin. I tend to write fairly loose outlines before I begin, but I do outline because I do think it's important before you begin a novel. And this is something that I will tell, emerging novelists to focus on. It is very important to understand a few very key things before you begin writing a book. One is, what does your main character want that they don't have? Because that's going to be the engine that drives the narrative of the book. If you
Right.
don't understand that, you need to do a little bit more work. You need to go back to the drawing board and really figure out what's at the core of your main character's journey. Because I really do believe every story is a journey. So structurally, I figure out what my character wants that they don't have. And then I figure out whether they're going to get it in the end or not. And I'm very cognizant of the fact that you can have a story with a happy ending in which the main character does not achieve that goal,
Right.
because by the end they've learned enough. There's always got to be a character arc running alongside the narrative of the story. If they don't achieve that, then they've learned something that's more important. Maybe they've learned that that wasn't the thing they wanted all along, or that something else is more important. So I structure. I start out with structure. What does the character want that they don't have? Do they get it at the end? What's their arc? And then after I have those things figured out, I try to think of something that's going to happen in the middle that's going to raise the stakes for the main character. So those are sort of the three points that's part of my process. And then I try to fill things in. And then once I have that sort of loose structure, I start to write the book. But I always do understand that the outline is always going to be an organic document, because as you write a book, you tend to get to know the characters better and better. And oftentimes they don't behave in ways that you thought they would when you wrote the outline. And I always say, I think you probably heard me say this before, character is king. You always have to stay true to the character. If you feel like you're forcing the character to do or say something, it's not working. You're not being true to the character, and the reader is going to know that. So you stay true to the character, and if you have to rejigger the plot, you rejigger the plot. But you always have to stay true to who this person is,
Right.
who you've created, because at this point they've come alive, right? So that's my process.
Yeah.
And then the other part of my process, I will say, that stands out is that I know a lot of writers believe in writing a very loose, I want to curse here, but let's say messy. Let's use the term messy,
Sure.
a messy first draft. They write a messy first draft and then go in and correct it. And if that's the way, and a lot of people write like that. And I know Stephen King, you know, is a big proponent of writing like that. And a lot of writers are, you got to get it down. If you don't have anything down, there's nothing to edit. And that's fine if that's the way you write. For me, I'm a little bit more anal than that. And I have to sort of pound away at every page before I can move. I have to get everything perfect before I can move on. Maybe it slows me down a little bit, but that is just what works for me. And that's what I always want to stress. You do what's right for you, for your personality, for your personal style as a writer.
That's really insightful and helpful stuff. I appreciate that.
Thanks. I know that's my long answer to the process question.
Do you ever use like word or page or chapter deadlines?
Oh, I do. I do impose deadlines on myself. You know, and very often the deadlines that I impose on myself have to sync up with what my, you know, sometimes I have a book contract and I'm writing toward a deadline. But right. Even if I'm not doing that, I try to create deadlines for myself and say, you know, I'd like to finish the book by such and such date. So then I sort of back up and figure out how many pages I have to write per day or per week. And I really try to hit those marks as I'm writing. So it keeps me focused. It keeps me on track.
Right. Very good. Now, I consider myself a storyteller. So
great.
When I'm writing, I don't really have a message in mind. I'm just trying to write an entertaining story.
Mm-hmm. Right.
When I read your work, I do recognize these underlying messages. So first, are those messages a conscious effort, or do they just kind of develop organically as the story is progressing? And secondly, do you think these messages are important to story development? Am I doing it wrong?
I think that it's not necessary, and I think it could get in your way personally. If you really start to sit down and think, what's my message? What's my message? What's my message? I think if you concentrate on character development, concentrate on story arc, I think the message is going to evolve organically. I often don't know what the message of my book is until I finished it. And then I try to sit down and tell somebody what it's about. And I think that's true for a lot of writers. It might sound backwards, but I really do think that's true for a lot of writers. So listen, if you write literary fiction and you really want to write message, then go for it. But I think for most of us, it's really a matter of exploring a human story and then a message sort of evolves from there.
Yeah, I was in a writing group once and I'd written a story and two of the other members were arguing back and forth over what the message was. And they finally turned to me and said, well, which one of us was right? I'm like, both of you. Because I didn't write a message in the first place, but you found one, and that's great.
Right. Listen, one particular philosophy is once you're done with the story or the book, it's not yours anymore. It belongs to the reader.
Yes.
And if they want to find a message in it, that's their prerogative.
Right.
And they're not wrong.
No.
You know, what it means to them is what it means to them.
So now, Dorothy Parker has appeared in a few of your novels or been referenced in a few others. Tell us who Dorothy Parker was and how much of influence she's been on you.
So Dorothy Parker was a famous wit, American wit who wrote in the, you know, 20s. She's primarily thought of as a writer from the 1920s, but she died in 1967 and she was really writing most of her life. She never wrote a novel. She wrote poems, short stories, literary criticisms, theater criticisms. She wrote some essays, but she was an extremely sharp wit with an extremely vivid voice. Her voice is so fresh and so vivid that things that she wrote 100 years ago still sound fresh, which is absolutely an extraordinary thing to say. So she was very, very frank, and she could be very cutting and very acerbic. And she also understood heartbreak like no one else. So I first discovered her as a teenager, and I read her witty poems about heartbreak, which were at once funny and pithy and sensitive, and I just felt that somehow she got me. So I became really, really interested in her from a young age. And then the more I got to read her and the more I got to know her, the bigger fan I became, to the point where she became that little acerbic voice on my shoulder, saying the things that I didn't dare say because I always wanted to be nice and I always wanted people to like me. And
Right.
Dorothy Parker didn't really give a damn. So, like I said, she was always with me. And then I think there was a point in sometime probably around maybe 2012 where there were a lot of books on the market that featured Jane Austen, either as a character or as an inspiration. There was a lot of Jane Austen centered fiction, which I think is great. I'm still a Jane Austen fan to this day. But I thought, isn't it curious that only Jane Austen gets that treatment and no other historical woman writer?
Right.
And I thought, man, somebody should do that for Dorothy Parker. I'd read that book in a heartbeat. And then I thought, well, wait a minute, maybe me.
Why not me?
And as soon as I said it, no, I was utterly intimidated by the idea. I was like, I cannot possibly do that, can I? And the more I thought about it, the more I really wanted to take a crack at it. I was writing another book at the time, but I pitched the idea to my agent, and she was like, whoa, let's go. Let's go. Let's do this book. So I wrote it, and it was called Farewell Dorothy Parker, and I reimagined her. It was not a historical fiction novel. I reimagined the ghost of Dorothy Parker coming back to life in a modern setting to help a modern woman who needed her own character arc. And then I actually wound up writing another book, which was a prequel to that called Dorothy Parker Drank Here. So along the way of writing those two books, I had started a Dorothy Parker page on Facebook, which is hugely popular, has about a quarter of a million followers and reaches, millions of people a month.
Wow.
And that is kind of a labor of love, even though my last Dorothy Parker book came out in 2016 and I've not written another one since. I still maintain the page and I still connect with Dorothy Parker fans on a daily basis. And it's just a labor of love. I really enjoy it. And yeah, she's still there with me somewhere, weighing in on my life and finding a way to make an appearance in all of my books.
Right.
Yeah.
Did you find it a challenge to try and capture her essence?
Was such a challenge. It was so intimidating. I felt a great sense of responsibility, not just to capturing her wit, but people really think of her as this hard, acerbic individual. And there was so much more to her. She had a huge heart. She was an activist. She really wanted to help people. She was involved in a lot of causes, including civil rights at the end of her life. She
Right.
left her entire estate to the NAACP, first to Dr. Martin Luther King, who actually died within less than a year of her. He was assassinated. So yeah, she really cared deeply about human rights. She went to Boston to protest the execution of two Italian immigrants. It was a famous case. They were called Sacco and Vanzetti.
Sure.
And they were sort of railroaded in a murder trial by a judge who had a political vendetta against them. So, she cared deeply about people and she cared deeply about injustice and she cared deeply about civil rights. So I felt a great sense of responsibility to portray all of the woman, from the
Right.
acerbic part of her to the heartbroken part of her to the part of her that really cared.
Well, I read Farewell, Dorothy Parker, and not knowing who she was beforehand, heard a name, but didn't really know who she was. And I found out a lot about her and did some more research. And I think you really did do a great job in capturing it.
Thank you.
So obviously a big influence on you. Do you have any other influences?
It's kind of a funny thing, but I think that I'm influenced in some way, large or small, by every book that I read.
Sure.
Even if it's a book that I don't think is particularly good, there's always something, because as a writer, I'm sure you well know, you're always trying to work something out. There's always some thorny problem that you're working on. And I will say that everything I read has usually, I find some insight, something to take away that's going to help me. And it could be something as small as, well, that was an interesting transition, how that writer got from paragraph A to paragraph B.
Yes,
So it could be
yes.
something really, really small. Or, gee, what a unique way to handle a dialogue tag. So if you're writing, you tend to pay attention to the big and the small. So I would say, yeah, I'm really influenced by everything that I read. You know, it's funny, I do know some writers who tell me that when they're writing a book, they don't read other novels because they're afraid that they're going to sort of subconsciously lift whole sentences and they're going to find their way to their book.
Right.
That feels a little silly to me. I can't imagine accidentally stealing somebody's sentence. But since I'm always writing, it wouldn't make sense for me to only read when I'm not writing. I would never be reading.
Right.
But I think that, you know, you're going to be influenced by the things that sort of rise to the surface, you know, when you're writing. So, yeah.
Oh, very good. I've found myself when I'm stuck with my own writing and I'm reading something else, say, oh, I like that. I might borrow that concept.
Right. Right.
Just to get me through a rut.
Right. I talk about it. It's an influence, right?
Right.
You're allowed to be influenced. We're all influenced. Makes us better writers, I think.
Right. Many of your novels' plots have been decidedly different.
Right.
There have been ghost stories, murder mysteries, rom-coms.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
How challenging is it to navigate through those different plots, and where do you come up with your ideas?
Well, I never set out and say to myself, gee, I'm gonna, you know, gonna switch gears. I'm gonna be a mystery writer now. It all usually happens fairly organically with me. And actually, from a marketing perspective, it does become a little challenging because I don't exactly fit into a lane. So I think the marketing folks get a little frustrated. It's like, where are we putting this author? Because she's writing a rom-com and she just wrote a mystery. But sometimes these ideas occur to me and I sort of can't get rid of them. And I guess I really also like a challenge. So I say, I'm going to give this one a shot, even though it's not like something I've ever written before.
Right.
But I think no matter how far I stray from what I've written before, I think it, you know, just sort of always comes back to having something of the Ellen Meister voice running through it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
I've also noticed that your main characters seem to have this subtle meekness, this hesitancy that they have to try and work through. This doesn't seem to comply with what I know about you.
Mm-hmm.
You're more certain, more convicted. It makes me wonder, how much of yourself or your life do you, in fact, put into your work?
Yeah. Well, I mean, two things, really. One is that I think that I always search for a flaw to give my characters, right? And I have to find something that's going to get in the way of them moving forward and something that they can learn to overcome by the end. So if you see these sort of character flaws, that's where that comes from. It's really part of developing a full story for my character. And people often ask me, oh, who are you in this book? Which one is you? Which one of these characters is you? And this, again, this another question with two answers, because one of the answers is none of them.
Mm-hmm.
And the other answer is all of them.
Right.
Because I have to find something, no matter how different a character is from me, I have to find something in them that I can relate to on a very, very specific and profound level in order to write them and find a way to write them realistically. So I do put a lot of myself into these characters, and people always ask about whether my books are in any way autobiographical. And I think what's really important to me is to find emotional truths from my life and work them into the book. So I wouldn't necessarily take an incident from my life and describe that incident in the book, but I would look at how did that incident affect me? What was the profound emotional experience I had there? And try to find a story point to wrap around it that would bring out that emotional truth that I really want to get across.
Right.
So that's where the autobiographical part comes in. But people don't recognize it because it's not things that really happened to me.
Right. Right. Yeah. That's fascinating. You alluded to this a little bit earlier. But I once heard you tell a story about the publication and the marketing of your novel, Love Sold Separately.
Yes.
Could you relay that story here?
Yeah, so that was kind of interesting because when I wrote Love Sold Separately, I had gotten this idea for a murder mystery. And it was a murder mystery in which the lead host of a shopping channel, kind of like a QVC, gets murdered. And the plot came to me, and the more I thought about it, the more fully formed it became. And I knew who the main character was, and I fell madly in love with this main character. And I thought, well, I don't know why I got an idea to write a murder mystery because I don't even know how to write a murder mystery. It's something very specific. But since the idea wouldn't leave me alone, I went and taught myself how to write a murder mystery. I'd read murder mysteries, but I had never really taken them apart to figure out the mechanics of it. So I did that. I read some more murder mysteries and I read about how to write a murder mystery. And then I thought, okay, I'm in love with this story. I'm going to write this murder mystery and I'm not going to write it under my name. I'm going to choose a pseudonym. And that first book, I was calling it Kitty Kitty Bang Bang, which I absolutely loved that title. The
Yes.
name of the person who got killed was named Kitty Todd. She was a shopping channel host and she was horrible, by the way. I only kill people who are truly horrible.
That's good.
And I showed it to my agent and she absolutely loved it. But then I discovered something really interesting, which was that there was no appropriate murder mystery category for this book to fit into because my sleuth was an amateur sleuth. She was a shopping channel host, right? She wasn't a police detective, she wasn't a private investigator.
Right.
And usually, when you've got an amateur sleuth, it falls into a category called a cozy mystery, which is solved by an amateur. But a cozy mystery is something very, very specific. It takes place in a small town. It's very G-rated. It usually has some sort of hobby like baking or knitting at the center.
Right.
But usually got, well, I had a cute title. It usually is a cute title. But my book, it wasn't G-rated. I mean, it kind of had like sex, drugs, rock and roll.
Right.
And it was not a cozy. So all of these publishers who publish mysteries, they showed it to their marketing departments and they said, well, we like the book, but we have no idea how to sell this. It's not a procedural, it's not a cozy, it's not a thriller. We don't know what it is.
Right.
We don't know where to put it. And then I got fortunate that an editor from Mira fell in love with the book and they decided to market it as a rom-com because it did have a romance in it. So it was a rom-com with a mystery element as opposed to a mystery that had some romance in it. And then the title got changed to Love Sold Separately. And then there was a sequel with the same main character called The Rooftop Party.
Right.
So that's how that happened. And because it wasn't marketed as a murder mystery, it became an Ellen Meister book rather than being written under a pseudonym.
There you go. There you go. I'm so glad you found a way to do it, because I enjoyed both the Dana Barry books.
Thank you. Well, you really did some backlist reading there, Kevin. I
Yes.
appreciate that.
So since we brought her up, and you said Dana Barry is the main character in Love Sold Separately and The Rooftop
Yes.
Party.
Yeah.
As you mentioned earlier, Dorothy Parker is the main
Right.
character in two different novels.
Yeah.
When writing recurring characters, is it difficult finding their voices that second time?
No. I would say it makes it easier because you have a built-in voice, you have an established character. At that point, you know the character so well that all you have to do is come up with the setting and come up with the scene and then sit back and let them talk to you.
Right.
At that point, you become the typist because they're doing the talking. So I actually enjoyed that. I found it a little bit actually easier to put them in another story. But those are the only two books I wrote with a, only four books, I should say,
Right.
with a recurring character. So,
Any chances they might return someday?
a lot of people do ask me if I ever plan to write another Dorothy Parker book. I never say never. I don't have any plans to.
Right.
But right now, no, I'm on to other things.
Very good. To that point, your latest novel, Joyride, was just released in late April. So, how is the launch going?
It's going really well. I was very excited. You know, it was released on this. There's a site called NetGalley, which is a website for reviewers to be able to get early copies of the book before it's published. They get digital copies of it and post reviews. And I was just so buoyed by the love that the book got from those early reviewers. So before it even came out, I was very excited that it was getting like really just the kind of reception that I had hoped for this book. This book really means a lot to me, Kevin. I mean, I had to fight for this book. It went through a lot of rewriting, a lot of iterations. It took me a long time to get it right, but I knew from the beginning, from the time I first had the idea, that I had something there. But like I said, I fought for it in every way. I fought for it within myself in terms of rewriting. I fought for it from a business standpoint. And I'm just thrilled that it's out in the world and that people are responding to it and loving it. And that in times when, you know, a lot of people are going through very, very hard times right now. So it's this book, I think people are telling me anyway, that it's offering them some respite, and that's a wonderful feeling.
That's great. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Give us the book jacket summary of Joyride.
Sure. So this book of all my books has the easiest elevator pitch, right? Because Joyride is about a woman Uber driver who becomes a life coach from the front seat of her car. That's the log line. Very easy to understand in just a few words exactly what's at the center of the book. But the book is also about her relationship with her curmudgeonly father, who was absent for most of her life. He was a successful comedy writer in Hollywood. Down on his luck, he winds up on a Brooklyn doorstep, moving in. So it has an odd couple kind of quality as she tries to navigate her life with her father, tries to navigate her own sort of obsession with being a people pleaser. So she has an arc, and you know, she has to figure out a lot of things in her own life. And then there's also a love story aspect to it. You know, there's a romance threading its way through the story as well.
So you tell the story through the lens of the main character, Joy Bird Martin.
Yes.
How did you go about determining the point of view in this novel and in general?
Wow. This one was a tough one in terms of point of view. Normally, my comfort zone is I usually write from one point of view. The not that not all my books have one point of view. Some have multiple points of view. But I write from one character's point of view at a time, which is to say, I don't write in the omniscient perspective, right? I write every scene is told from the point of view of one character, even though it's in third person. It's not in first, but it's third person, limited. So you're only viewing the world through the eyes of one character at a time. And I knew it was Joybird's story, but the thing about Joybird's character, she really isn't like any character I'd ever written before, in that she is very cheerful and very optimistic. She doesn't have a sarcastic or edgy bone in her body. And I thought, my God, how do I carry off a whole book from this point of view? I just didn't think that I could do it, especially, you know, I'm a New Yorker. I'm a sarcastic person. That's how I view life.
It's in your blood, yeah.
And so I tried several different points of view before I got it right. I mean, at one point of view, I had written, at one point in time, I had written the entire book from her father's point of view, because he's very edgy and very sarcastic. And it didn't work. And I tried again and again and again, and I just couldn't get it right, writing it all from his point of view. I tried yet another point of view, something a little bit experimental, writing it from somebody only tangentially related to the story. And that was a little better. But I knew I still hadn't nailed it. At that point, I realized I had to see, give it a shot and have a little bit of faith and trust the process and write the whole book from Joybird's point of view, but also offer sporadic chapters from her father's point of view to break it up. And also, I thought it was really important to see his perspective on his relationship with Joybird and his relationship with the world, especially since he's a very difficult, crusty, curmudgeonly, pessimistic, sarcastic sort of character. And I wanted the readers to sort of get inside his cynicism and understand it from the inside out. So it's Joybird's story. Most of the chapters are from her point of view, but I also let her father sort of share the microphone at times.
It worked well.
Thank you.
There, and you're kind of touching on this now. There seems to be this mirror image, yet this generational clash between your main character, Joybird, and her
Yes.
father, Sid. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. That's how really the story started. I just thought it would be so interesting to have this character who, and I always hesitate to use the term PC because people are so glib about that.
Right.
But this is somebody who's so earnest and feels political correctness from the core of her being. She so desperately wants to be a good person with a capital G and a capital P. It's absolutely who she is. And then I thought it would be so fascinating to pit her against somebody who's the exact opposite, who's cynical about anything that seems PC or woke. And I wanted them both to have completely valid points of view and to clash on. And I thought that would just, it would open itself up to comedy, but also to just giving two different perspectives, two different valid perspectives in this very, very divided world that we have. So I thought it was really interesting. And every time I put them in a scene together, I had fun. I thought it was interesting. I thought their dialogue sort of, to me, danced right off the page. And I also love the sort of odd couple quality of having them sharing living quarters. And then, of course, obviously, they had to figure out a way to navigate the relationship with one another, which was really fraught. He had abandoned her as a child. She was desperate to make him love her. And he wanted to make up for lost time, but it's just the kind of guy that couldn't get out of his own way. So they both had this journey, and it was a struggle to write, but also a joy to write.
I can hear the passion that you have for these characters.
Thank you. Thank
Yeah.
you. Yeah. No, I really am. I really am passionate about the story and the characters. I love them. Yeah, and people say to me, sometimes people tell me that they hate Sid, the father. And I'm not surprised anymore because enough people have said it, but it's really interesting to me because I know he's difficult and can be terrible, but I still love the guy. Yeah.
I actually laughed out loud quite a few times during this
Yay.
book. I can't necessarily reference the moments here because most of them were said by Sid, who has no filter,
Right.
but I laughed nonetheless. I've noticed how important is humor in your writing?
Yeah, it's very important. At the beginning of the conversation, we talked about how I started in advertising, and I really felt the need to sort of tap dance my heart out on every page. And I think humor is part of that. I really want to keep the reader engaged, not just with story and with character and with tension, but with humor. Listen, I kind of feel like there's this unwritten contract between me and the reader. And I do think of myself as an entertainer. Honest to God, I really do. Especially in this world where there is so much competition for a person's attention, right? So they've got my book in front of them, but they might be thinking about checking their TikTok account or checking their Instagram account or checking their Facebook page or checking their email or checking their text messages. And if I'm going to keep them in that book, well, damn it, I got to work very, very hard for that. And I think humor is part of that, keeping them engaged and keeping them enjoying it and making it an entertaining journey.
You did a good job with
Thank you. Because I don't
it.
think the reader owes me a thing, but I think I owe them.
Sure.
Yeah.
You
Thank you,
delivered.
Kevin. I appreciate that.
I also noticed in many of your novels that a character or two has some sort of artistic ability, whether it's painting, acting, writing. How significant is the inclusion of those traits in your writing?
Interesting question. And now I'm going to tell you a little secret.
Okay.
But you probably know this, but maybe a lot of readers out there don't. Every time a writer puts an artist in their work, whether they're a fine artist or a photographer or a sculptor or whatever they are, that is always a stand-in for writing. In some way, the writer is revealing how they feel about their art and their craft when they write about that creative endeavor. So I think it's such a big part of my life that I always feel compelled to find something of that to infuse into my stories.
You know, I totally agree with that.
Yeah. Yeah, so, but that's a tip for the readers out there, that every time they see, you know, because a lot of writers, you will find a lot of books where a main character is a photographer or an artist. And, you know, next time I want the readers to read that, I want them to think about writing.
Right. That little peek behind the curtain. Yeah.
Yeah, a little peek behind the curtain. Yeah.
All right. So let's do a little word association with your characters.
Sure.
I'll give you the character. You give me the brief description.
Sure.
And we'll start with the top with Joy Byrne Martin.
Ernest. That is the prevailing characteristic of Joy Byrne. She is earnest and she is optimistic. When I was pitching the book, I would tell people, think of the Leslie Knope character from Parks and Rec. Earnest, cheerful. There's a lot of that in Joy Byrne.
Very good. How about Sid Marcus?
Sid is cynical. And though he doesn't like to admit it, sad. And I think he uses his sharpness to cover up a lot of his sadness.
Okay. How about Devin Cato?
Devin is somebody who walks around with a lot. I think he has a big heart. And I think Devin has had some serious heartbreak in his life. But I think at his heart, he's a disappointed romantic. So I think when he falls in love, I think he really falls in love. He's very smart also. I like Devin a lot. He's very insightful and very curious. Yeah.
Very good. How about Donna DeLuca?
I don't want to give any spoilers, but she's a nut job. That's the professional assessment. Yeah, she's pretty nutty without giving any spoilers.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
How about Noah Perlman?
Noah thinks a lot of himself. I think Noah takes himself a little bit too seriously. I think that's part of Noah's problem. I don't think he's as perceptive about himself as he thinks he is, but he wants to be. He thinks he's a poet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we'll finish off with my favorite character, Betty Simon.
I was waiting for you to ask about Betty. So Betty's an old aging hippie who has really clung to her ideals. I think there's a bit of me and a bit of a lot of the women that I really love and admire in Betty. So I think she becomes sort of a mentor and also a mother figure to Joy Byrne. I love her a lot. I think that she's full of good advice. I think she's full of good perspective. And I think that she's just got the ability to let things sort of, you know, roll off her back. But I love that she carries a lot of the, you know, of peace, love, and togetherness inside her psychology in this day and age.
Yeah, I love the way all the characters did gel and mesh together and drag the storyline across.
Thank you. She probably surprised me more than any of the characters as the book went on. I think I just liked her more and more and more.
Yeah.
You know, some characters start out as handy in terms of story development.
Right.
And then suddenly one day you wake up and they have a soul.
Yes.
And you just realize, I'm going places with this one that I didn't know I was going. Yeah.
Yeah, that's I always like those characters like Betty, who's kind of like the wise mentor. When it's done right, you did it right.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks. Yes. Had fun with her.
Obviously, I read the audiobook.
Mm-hmm.
So can you talk to me about the narrator, Sarah Norton, and how much input did you have in that process?
Okay. Well, first of all, I think she's fantastic. I don't know her personally. I've never met her. And publishers have different ways of involving the author in terms of whether they get a say in the audiobook narrator. So they don't come to me and say, hey, you know, you choose an audiobook narrator and let us know. What they do is say our crack audiobook people, and they have experts who understand the book and what the book's needs are. they identify a handful of audiobook narrators that they think would be right for the project. And then they give the author the recordings of them reading a little bit of the book. So when they ask you to choose which one you like best, with no guarantee that they're going to go with your choice, but they
Okay.
want your input. So I listened to, I can't remember, four or five different audiobook narrators, and they were all absolutely terrific. By the way, I listen to a lot of audiobooks, and I have a tremendous amount of respect for the talented actors and actresses who, because that they are actors who read audiobooks. They're absolutely terrific. So they were all great, but there was something about Sarah Naughton. I said, oh, she's got it. She's Joy Virtue. There's something about her that she just, I felt like she captured the spirit of the book. So I said, she's the one that I chose. I don't think I could have made a bad choice, but she just stood out for me. And I was very happy when the publisher actually, selected her and went with my choice. I
That's
thought she did
good.
a great job. And you thought you liked
Oh,
her
I loved
reading?
her. I loved
Yeah,
her. I
good.
think I've heard her
Good.
before as well in other
Yeah.
things. Like, I read a lot of audiobooks.
You probably have.
And every time every time I hear her, I'm like, oh, good. We got
Yeah,
Sarah.
yeah, 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 yeah. There are a couple that really stand out to me as well. But yeah, she's my new favorite now.
Yes.
Yeah.
Good choice.
Yeah. Thank you.
So now, I know Joyride just came out, but do
Yes.
you have anything else in the works?
I do. I've been actually working on a couple of things right now. And it's hard, I don't have a book contract. This is just in the very nascent stages, and I'm playing with something. And all I'll say about it is that it's a sibling book. It's three adult siblings. And it's funny and serious, kind of like Joyride. So, but very, very different types of characters. And so far, I'm in the stages of falling in love with it. And so we'll see where it goes, if this is actually going to be the one that I see through to the end and hopefully get published.
I'm already hooked because I am one of three siblings.
Ah, you too,
So,
hey?
yes.
Okay.
I
All right.
can't wait for it.
Yeah, where do you fall in the mix?
I'm the youngest.
Okay.
That's brother, sister, then me.
All right. I'm middle, but I prefer to think of it as center.
Okay, very
Which is what I
good.
tell my middle, because I have three kids. I would might tell my middle child. I say we're not in the middle, we're in the center. So yeah.
Everything revolves around you,
Yeah. There
right?
you go. There you go.
So, where can people find you or your work?
The easiest thing to do is go to ellenmeister.com, ellenmeister. I have a website. From there, you can read about my books. You connect with me in social media. But if they want to connect with me in social media, I just go by my name, Ellen Meister, on pretty much every site that I'm on. So if they just sort of type that into the search, they can generally find me and try to connect. And if they're interested in following my Dorothy Parker page, if they go to Facebook and just type Dorothy Parker into the search bar, they'll find that page as well.
Okay, great.
And I'm
So
always eager to hear from readers, so they could always reach out.
we're nearing the end of the interview segment, and I always like to kind of end by asking, is there a question that I should have asked, but I didn't?
No, I think that you covered really everything. I mean, I enjoyed this conversation so much, from talking about specific books to talking about, the writing process and where people can find me. But if they do want to reach out and send me a message, there is an email form on my website. And yeah, I just like I said, I'd love to hear from them. And I should also say that they can find a lot of my books in their local library, or if they're on that Libby app, they can find them there as well.
Very good. That's where I found
Yeah.
mine.
There you go.
This was interesting. I thank you. But we're not done.
Okay.
I always finish by playing a little game with my guests. And the game I have chosen for you is called Page Turner,
Okay.
which is just a series of rapid-fire questions.
Okay.
So, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Do you own a library card?
I do. And I use it. And I still like to take actual books out of my library. And yes, I use the Libby app generally for audiobooks. But yes, I'm a card-carrying member of my local library.
Are you good at what you do?
I sure hope so. I sure try my hardest. So, yeah, I think so. I hope so.
I think so. You just touched on this, but audiobook, e-reader, hard text, which is your reading preference?
So, I do have an e-reader, but I don't use it very much. I prefer it either to hold a book or listen to an audiobook. I think at any given time, I'm usually in the middle of two books, one I'm listening to on audio, and one I'm actually reading in physical copy, sometimes a copy I own, and sometimes a copy I've taken out from my local library.
What do you do in your spare time?
What is that thing? Spare time? I'm not sure. I have two dogs, so I'm very busy with them in my spare time. I'm spending a lot of time with friends. I love spending time with friends. I like being outside. I work in the garden and I read. That's my spare time. And I do play spelling bee every morning.
Very good.
So, yeah.
When alone, whose music do you blast on the sound system?
Oh, it's usually either the Beatles or Stevie Wonder.
Two
Yeah.
good choices.
Yeah. And if I'm working out, sometimes, if I'm like on the treadmill, Chuck Berry, because I, want something a little faster,
Very good.
I hesitate to say run to, but walk quickly to. Yeah.
What keeps you up at night?
Politics. Let's leave that at
That's enough
that, Kevin. Yeah.
said.
Yeah.
When in New York, do you prefer a bagel, a slice, or a dirty water dog?
Probably a slice, but man, I do love a good bagel. Yeah. Yeah. So I would go either way depending upon time of day. But yeah, there's nothing like New York pizza. I mean, come on.
Right. For me, it's
Yeah.
never a slice. It's like two or three or four.
Yeah.
What is your favorite car that you've owned?
Oh, that's interesting. Well, right now, I drive a Santa Fe hybrid plug-in, and I absolutely love it. I just love the idea that I could run on electricity and not just be burning gas all the time. So I do love that car. I will say that I drove a minivan for years and years and years. I have three kids. Minivan is a great car when you have small kids because of those sliding doors.
Yep.
And then when the kids are in college, you could move stuff into and out of dorm rooms pretty easily. So I was still holding on to it. But I think, and this is my first car that I've actually owned post minivan. So I think that's why I'm
Okay.
so excited to have, I've got my Santa Fe plug-in hybrid. I think right now that's my favorite car. I'm not really a car person. I will add that though. A lot of times, in fact, when I write about cars and I give people a car in my book, I have to ask people, like, what, give me, help me out here. What car would this character drive? Because I'm just car stupid. I really don't know.
You and
So,
me both.
yeah, okay. Yeah.
So we'll finish off on a two-part question. Do you strive to be as optimistic as Joybird, and have you ever succeeded?
I think that I am naturally optimistic. I think that I was born optimistic. I think that the heaviness of the world at large is not natural to my character. And I think that's one of the reasons that I have so much trouble with it, because it really comes in conflict with the natural person I am, who's very hopeful and very optimistic and always tries to see the bright side. The world is making that a little challenging right now, but I am trying to hold on to hope and keep going with some joy, and find joy, as much joy in life as I can.
Well, it shows in your conversations and in your books.
Thank you. Thank you. I guess this may be more of me and Joybird than I thought. There you go.
Well, this was a lot of fun. And for those who are not aware, many of those questions were lifted straight from Ellen's book, Joyride. So give it a read and see how the characters answer those questions themselves. You will not be disappointed. And Ellen Meister, once again, I thank you for venturing beyond the rotunda.
Thank you so much. This was a great interview. I had a lot of fun, Kevin.
That was such an enjoyable conversation with Ellen Meister. And believe me when I tell you that her latest novel, Joyride, is equally as enjoyable. Pick it up at your local library or at your favorite bookseller. Now, our next episode will feature an interview with writer and editor Rich Hanley, whose work has appeared in over 160 books and publications from some of the most prominent franchises in the sci-fi and fantasy genre, including Star Trek, Planet of the Apes, DC Comics, and of course, Star Wars. And since I am a huge Star Wars fan, that is where most of my focus is going to lie. So please join me for that one. Thanks to Ellen Meister for bringing the joy. Thanks to Natalie and Brendan. Thanks to Maxio for our theme music. And of course, thanks to you for listening. My persistence seems to be paying off as our numbers continue to grow. So if you haven't done so yet already, please follow the podcast and share us with your family and friends. Until next month, be well and enjoy wandering the stacks.